This is the last day of this October 2007 7-day session. And we will take up another koan this morning. This is from the Book of Serenity, Shoyo Roku, as it was yesterday's. And this one is number 20, and it's called Dizang's Most Intimate. And it's quite short. Dizang asked Fayan, "Where are you going?" Fayan said, "I am wandering aimlessly." "What do you think of wandering?" Dizang asked him, "What do you think of wandering?" Fayan said, "I don't know." Dizang said, "Not knowing is most intimate." Fayan was suddenly enlightened. First, this Dizang is both of these guys were in the lived during the end of the Tang Dynasty. Dizang was a disciple of Quan Sha. The old records say that from early childhood he could speak very well and would not eat meat. I'm again reading here from Andy Ferguson's Zen's Chinese Heritage. It says that at first he closely followed the teachings of the Vinaya, but later he declared that just guarding against breaking the vows and adhering to the precepts did not equal true renunciation. He then set off to explore the teachings of the Zen school. Yeah, of course it doesn't equal true renunciation. Just keeping yourself within the fence of the precepts is hardly renunciation, much less liberation. And a lot of the old masters came to that conclusion after they'd spent time in the Vinaya school, that they needed something more, they needed something transcendent. Some dialogues here involving Dizang. His teacher questioned him, saying, "In the three realms, there is only mind. How do you understand this?" Dizang pointed to a chair and said, "What does the master call that?" And Quan Sha said, "A chair." Dizang said, "Then the master can't say that in the three worlds there is only mind." Quan Sha said, "I say that it is made from bamboo and wood. What do you say it's made from?" Dizang said, "I also say it's made from bamboo and wood." Quan Sha said, "I've searched across the great earth for a person who understands the Buddha Dharma, but I haven't found one." Said that Dizang did not aspire to a leading position in the Buddhist community, but his reputation nevertheless spread widely. A monk once asked him, "What is Dizang's single phrase?" It's another way of saying, give me a word of truth. What is Dizong's single phrase? Dizong said, if I tell you, it will turn into two phrases. A monk asked him, what is Dizong's house style? House as in lineage. Dizong said, I can't tell you. The monk said, why not? Dizong said, because it's my house style. Dizong once saw a monk approach. He held up his whisk and said, do you understand? The monk said, thank you for your compassionate instruction, master. Dizong said, you see me raise the whisk and you say I'm instructing you. When you see the mountains and rivers each day, do they not instruct you? Another time, Dizong saw a monk approaching and held up his whisk. The monk shouted in praise and bowed. Dizong said, when you saw me raise the whisk, you bowed and shouted. Why is it that when someone holds up a broom, you don't shout in praise? Once Dizong traveled to the capital of the province with Bao Fu and Chang Jing. These, I think, also became masters, or maybe were masters at that time. They saw some discarded peonies by the road. Bao Fu said, what a wonderful bunch of flowers. Chang Jing said, I've never seen such flowers. Dizong said, too bad, it's a bunch of flowers. That's all we have for Dizong. And now, the man who became his disciple and Dharma heir, Fa Yen. He was well educated and erudite as a young man. He studied the Confucian classics. He too studied under a Vinaya master before moving on to Zen, Chan. It relates here that the koan, today's koan, happened in the circumstances of a snowstorm where Fa Yen and his friends, which included Gizan, were stuck in a snowstorm and forced to stay at Dizong Monastery. And that's when Dizong asked Fa Yen, where are you going? And he said the rest. Let's just do the rest. Where are you going? I'm wandering aimlessly. What do you think of wandering? I don't know. Not knowing is most intimate. And then Fa Yen was enlightened. And then it gives a kind of a epilogue to this. When the snow was gone, the three monks said goodbye and started to leave. Dizong accompanied them to the gate and said, I've heard you say several times that the three realms are only mind and the many dharmas are only consciousness. And then he pointed to a rock lying on the ground by the gate that they were leaving from, and he said, so, do you say that this rock is inside or outside of mind? Fa Yen, who just had this enlightenment, said, inside. And Dizong said, How can a pilgrim carry such a rock in his mind while on pilgrimage? And at this, Fa Yen was dumbfounded. He couldn't answer. He put his luggage down right at Dizong's feet and asked him to clarify the truth. And then what followed is each day for the next month or so, Fa Yen spoke about his understanding with Dizong and demonstrated his understanding. And Dizong would always say, the Buddha Dharma isn't like that. Finally, Fa Yen said, I've run out of words and ideas. Dizong said, if you want to talk about Buddha Dharma, everything you see embodies it. And at these words, Fa Yen experienced great enlightenment. Fa Yen then traveled to another province where the governor invited him to become abbot of a monastery. On the day of the dedication of the monastery, Fa Yen just remained sitting in the tea hall and didn't leave. A monk said to him, monks from everywhere are now crowded around the master's Dharma seat waiting for you to speak. Fa Yen said, in that case, the monks are practicing with a genuine worthy. After a while, he then did ascend the Dharma seat, and the monk said, the assembly has gathered. We ask the master to expound the Dharma. Fa Yen said, you've all been standing here too long. And then he said, since all of you have assembled here, I can't say nothing at all. So I'll give you all an expedient that was offered by one of the ancients. Take care. And then he left the seat. These masters, they understood that everything they did was the Dharma. And those who felt that a Dharma talk, Taisho, had to be a certain way, had to be this and not that, were too bound by their notions. And that was part of his intention, was to shake them loose of that. Or maybe he just wasn't up for giving a talk that day. Which is also part of the Dharma. A monk asked him, what was the style of the ancient Buddhas? Fa Yen said, where can it not be completely seen? Fa Yen asked the monk, Zhao, did you come by boat or by land? Zhao replied, by boat. Fa Yen said, where is the boat? Zhao said, the boat is in the river. Zhao then left. Fa Yen turned to a monk standing to one side and asked, did that monk who was just here have the eye or not? That, by the way, is another koan in the Book of Serenity. A monk asks, what is the thing toward which an advanced student should pay particular attention? Fayan said, if the student has anything whatsoever which is particular, then he can't be called advanced. A monk asks, what is a true patch of earth? Fayan said, not a single patch of earth is true. Can you separate out a single patch? A monk asked, what is the ultimate teaching of all Buddhas? Fayan said, you have it too. There's a story that in former times, a Zen monk lived alone in a cottage. Above his door, he wrote the word, mind. Above his window, he wrote the word, mind. And on his wall, he wrote the word, mind. Zen Master Fayan said, above his door, he should have written, door. Above his window, he should have written, window. And on his wall, he should have written the word wall. Over the years, I've seen people on staff, occasionally staff members put a card or a little sign on their desk, people who are working on Mu, this says Mu as a reminder to get with it, to get back to Mu. I've never heard anyone testify that this was particularly effective, that it was very useful. Once when sand filled in and obstructed a new spring that was being dug at the temple, Fayan said, the mouth of the spring is obstructed by sand. When the Dharma eye is obstructed, what is it that obscures it? The monks were unable to answer. Fayan said, it's obstructed by the eye. All right, back to our case, our koan for today, Dizong's most intimate. Dizong asked Fayan, where are you going? Well, we don't know whether this was just a simple question. You know, remember they're stuck in a snowstorm, and he might have been asking, which direction are you going? More likely, there is a real other meaning to this. Man didn't mean it just in a literal sense in terms of north, south, east, or west, but there was an underlying question there. Where are you going? Or both, you know? It was probably just a test to see how Fayan took it. Where are you going? Fayan said, I am wandering aimlessly. What did he mean by that? Did he mean that he didn't have any particular destination and was just sort of finding a companion here or there and going along with someone? Or did he mean something more than that? Or did he know what he meant? I am wandering aimlessly. There's a passage I'd like to read by Bobby McFerrin. He was asked this question: "You are known for your improvised solo concerts. Can you explain how that works, the process of musical improvisation?" And this is what he said. I'm reading it because it is so similar to practice. He said, "The process is very easy to explain. Improvisation is basically motion. You simply sing one note and then another note, or you play one note and then you follow it with another. Even if it's rambling and you don't know what you're doing, you're still improvising because you don't really need a lot of musical knowledge. I'm not even sure if you need any at all, because anybody can physically move their fingers on the keyboard or the violin or the flute or whatever they're playing. Singers can open up their mouths and just sing one note after another. That's the motion of improv. And the true virtuosos who really do it well are the ones who sort of face the fear of the unknown and are constantly making themselves move into it without really seeing what the next step is going to be. Now that's the hardest part of improv, getting over the fear of doing it." It's also a perfect analogy for going to Doksan. The ones who sort of face the fear of the unknown and are constantly making themselves move into it without really seeing what the next step is going to be. A monk once asked Zhao Zhou, "To where is your mind focused?" And Zhao Zhou replied, "Where there is no design." So who can't relate to this reply of Fayan's? "I am wandering aimlessly." This is the essence of the spiritual path, in its essence. If you have a plan, if you have a map, then it's not really searching. You're following a form. You're following a map, something pre-arranged. It's the nature of searching to be in the dark. You don't know. You lose your keys. You can't find them. You have to get somewhere. You search for them. You search for them because you don't know where they are. And that's the hardest thing to work with. But it's exactly what we have to do. And this is true of all of the so-called mystical traditions. St. John of the Cross, in his book, The Dark Night of the Soul, said, if one wishes to be sure of the road he treads on, he must close his eyes and walk in the dark. Remember what Fayen said in his, after this initial awakening, when he stuck around and asked for more teaching from Dzogchen, and he kept bringing forth his understanding, and Dzogchen would keep saying, the Buddha Dharma isn't like that. And finally he said, I've run out of words and ideas. There it is. Now we're talking. And this is the whole point of a koan. In fact, it's the point of any Zen practice. It's a tool, it's a way to bring us into darkness. Let me read once more a wonderful passage. About working on a koan. This is from a Japanese teacher, I think, and he compared it to a blind man. He said, suppose here is a completely blind man who trudges along, leaning on his stick and depending on his intuition. The role of the koan is to mercilessly take the stick away from him and to push him down after turning him around. Now the blind man has lost his soul support and will not know where to go or how to proceed. He will be thrown into the abyss of despair. In this way, the Nanto koan, that's a particularly difficult koan, in this way the Nanto koan will mercilessly take away all our intellect and knowledge. In short, the role of the koan is not to lead us to Satori easily, but on the contrary, to make us lose our way and drive us to despair. I am wandering aimlessly. And then Dzogchen saw that this is someone whose mind was ripe, and he said, what do you think of wandering? I don't know. Not knowing is most intimate, Dzogchen said. And at that, Fayen was suddenly enlightened. As long as we know, which always means think we know, as long as we know, then we can't really discover anything new. And yet the layers of knowing, believing, clinging to ideas, to principles, to assumptions, to concepts are just many, many, many layers. The denuding of the mind takes time. Or if not time, it takes a tremendous effort to really flush out all of these notions that stain the purity of the mind, this pure state of openness. I think of someone who's a really experienced typist, who can type fast, 70 words a minute. If you ask such a person, where is the L key? It's not at all sure that they would be able to tell you. But if you say, hit the L key, there. They're so intimate with that keyboard that it's not an idea in their mind. It's pure experience. It's the thing itself. They can't easily step back and think about it. I think it's similar with chanting when we're we've chanted the same chant hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of times. It's just embedded in us in a way. And if you were to ask, well, does this follow that or this? It's the same thing. Then it becomes an idea. And you have to remove yourself. Same with relationships. If we feel that we know someone inside and out, that's not the deepest intimacy. We may know a lot about someone, but people are so full of contradictions. And besides that, constantly changing to some degree. But it's such a human tendency to want to know. Because to not know is to be in a state of insecurity. Not knowing by nature is insecure. You have no footing. You have no solid ground under you. And as human beings, we hate that. And that's why practice is so arduous, because it keeps drawing us back into, away from what we know, back into the darkness. Because that's where we need to be. The koan, when questioning a koan, one is just continually pulling the ground out from under one. It's a state of non-abiding. In the old texts, great Chinese documents, Zen documents, and Japanese, there's this phrase, non-abiding, non-dwelling. It's having this freedom. We can't have it both ways. We can't have our position secured, nailed down, and have freedom. Because life is flux. Everything is changing moment by moment. We need to be the change, and when we are the change, then we're non-abiding. So questioning is the ultimate way of preventing us from clinging to anything. Knowledge, so-called knowledge, ideas, concepts, opinions. To the degree that we are questioning, we are free of those things. We're free to discover. Socrates said, wisdom begins in wonder. Wonder. I wonder, what is it? What is Mu? Who am I? You can't question and know at the same time. Do you want to know, which is the false, the old, the familiar, or do you want to discover? And so Bodhidharma was asked by the emperor, who are you? I don't know. Most people are happy to tell you that. Well, I'm the kind of person who likes to do this, and it's my opinion that it's my belief. What's that program on NPR? What's that called?
This I believe.
There we got. Now we know who we are. This is where I stand. This is who I am. This I believe. Sounds so noble. I heard that they have something like 20,000 people have written in to say what they believe. Imagine the job of sorting through that. Imagine someone saying, this is what I believe Mu is. Now, listen, it's this and that and this and that. But to show Mu means being it. And when we are it, what can we know about it? When we are typing. I don't know what all those keys are very easily. Some people sometimes say, well, I just can't, with my koan, I can't really get the questioning going. It feels just forced, artificial. Doesn't work for me. And I say, okay, if that's the case, don't force it. Don't try to contrive questioning if it isn't really there. But then if you can just become absolutely one with it, chances are out of that oneness, when you reach a certain degree of intimacy with the koan, then it will suddenly become bewildering. And the question then emerges naturally on its own. Our time is up. Let's stop and recite the four vows.